Okay. All right. Okay, everybody. Happy Zen Talk number 9. Is this 9, I think?
9.
Methinks. I'm going to start to lose track of that because we're getting there. So anyway, welcome and happy summer. And I feel like summer is like passing me by, even though...
Summer started on June 21st. Mm-hmm. So technically we're not even...
Oh, you mean the actual summer, the summer season? Yeah, I was going to say it started.
So we're not even one third of the way through, sweetheart.
I know, but my children go back to school.
I know, the whole school argument. I'm just saying, let's focus on what we have. Mm-hmm. Goes to September 21st.
Okay, I'm going to stay in that mindset. So one of the things I wanted to share is that, first of all, thank you to everybody who's doing the kindness campaign with us. We're going to figure out a way to keep that going, if it be by tagging or... just people, you know, after we get through everybody, or maybe it's just by people just doing random acts and sharing them. I don't know, but I really like it.
And if you have any ideas, if we like run out of gas on this, we come up with an alternate.
Yeah, another kind of campaign.
Yeah.
What I do want is for people to feel like there's something that makes them feel good. What I don't want is for people to feel like there's something they have to do.
We don't want to be a to-do list.
Mm-mm, I don't want to do anything to-do-ish. The whole idea of Zen Talks is to come and relax and just be given information and chill. And
Frankie says relax.
Yes, Frankie says relax. So we don't want to give you more things to do. But sometimes kindness, it's not about doing something more. It's about shifting your energy in the situation. And I'll give you an example. This is what I wanted to share. This is my first thing. So I was reading something last night, and I don't know, for those of you who like therapists and like love Western theory.
I love a therapist.
Well, thank you. Virginia Satir is a family therapist who a lot of us who go to school to become therapists study. And I really liked her because she was kind of, obviously she's a family therapist, but she really got into the humanistic perspective, and she didn't treat people like robots and roles. She thought of them in a more human way. So anyway, she said, the problem is not the problem. Coping is the problem. Okay. So just take that in for a second. The problem, whatever you're dealing with right now, is really not the problem. Mm-hmm. It's how you're coping with the problem. Makes sense?
Totally.
It's like, what kind of tools do you have? What's your outlet? How do you ask for help? How do you view it? How do you see it? And what was most important about this, is this builds kindness, because kindness is built into this. Because one thing, as we talk about kindness in this group or in our family or in our lives, is kindness doesn't mean that we're always nice to everybody all the time, and that we never have any other feelings but being kind. Okay, I'm just going to read this instead of trying to paraphrase. Setting the intention to practice kindness towards one's partner, family members, friends does not preclude getting angry or upset. It doesn't mean sugarcoating the truth. Practicing kindness is about getting real, but this is the key, but in ways that are constructive and support the growth of the relationship. So an author of this Atlantic article, her name's Julie Gottman, she said, here's another quote, "Kindness doesn't mean that we don't express our anger, but the kindness informs how we choose to express our anger." Does that make sense?
So it sounds like, first of all, being angry or sad or whatever, the negative emotions,
correct,
quote unquote,
right,
are okay. It's just how you express. Because when people think of angry, I think of yelling.
Right. And that's exactly. And what we're always trying to talk about with emotions and you know, handling our emotions is that all of them are okay. Because we view anger as yelling and negative, like I have a girlfriend who always says to me that she is so afraid of her anger because she grew up with people who were so angry and saw how they responded in anger. So she's afraid to even like say I'm angry or feel what anger feels like, because she's afraid it'll turn into something crisis oriented. And the truth is that anger is very healthy, because anger is what tells us a boundary has been crossed, or, you know, something going on with our leadership or government. and we get angry. I don't know why any of us would. But when we do, because I do, it's my moral code being rubbed, you know, hit, where I'm like, that is uncomfortable to me. That makes me angry. That's a boundary that's been crossed in my perception. So the anger informs who we are. So I'm saying all that because as we talk about kindness, it's that paradox of, yes, being kind is the key, but kindness can be used while we're angry. And that it's about how we express our anger, how we share it rather than being combative or going after people. We share it in the kindness is what helps us decide. I want to say this the right way. The kindness is our method in expressing ourselves.
Did you see the clip that I sent to you, the YouTube clip?
The joy thing? I haven't watched it yet.
There, one of our listeners, and maybe we'll talk about this because we're going to record next week's podcast this afternoon, but it talks about, if you've ever seen
Inside Out.
Inside Out by Pixar, awesome movie. We actually play clips from it on the podcast quite often. Mm-hmm. And this one guy did like an 8-minute video blog about his interpretation of it. And, you know, we're led to believe that joy is the protagonist and maybe the antagonist is either the parents or the fact that they moved away.
Or sadness or anger.
Or sadness or anger. And what he flips it on its head and says, actually, joy is the antagonist. Joy is the one who bullies sadness around. Mm-hmm. And joy is the one who's always trying to control everything. And I don't even know if I necessarily agree with everything that the guy said in the video blog, but it at least reframed it for me a little bit of, because I liked Joy Autumn, like, I, you know, it was, what's her name? Amy Poehler. She was just very likable and easy. Yet we always view Joy as the good guy, happiness. We're always trying to get happy. And anger, the guy who's all red and mad, as kind of the one that we want to repress. So it's like basically what you're saying in the same way. It's just interpreted through a little bit different story.
Well, and that's the thing is like that it's, again, it's the paradox. There is no absolute. It doesn't mean, okay, now joy is the problem. It just means that all things can be true at once. That in that movie, joy can be what gives her, you know, what lights, what's her name, Riley? What lights Riley up inside. And joy is also causing a lot of the problems by trying to control everything. Sometimes we, like when I'm meditating, and for those of you who have a meditation practice, you may understand this. Sometimes I'm feeling really good and I sit down to meditate and the meditation doesn't feel good and I get pissed off. I'm like, why am I doing this?
Why are you meditating or why are you going
through
this?
I went from feeling good to meditating and not feeling good. Mm. But what I understand about meditation is what's coming up when I close my eyes is living there no matter what. So it's not the meditation.
You're just letting it come up.
Correct. And then my expression in that time is, how do I just let that, that's what meditation is. How do I see that anger or frustration or discomfort and let it be? Mm. And not try and fix it.
Or maybe not even let it be, but how to process it. I mean, I do a lot of that with men's groups. We talk about giving the emotion a color or a place in the body, because if you just kind of let it be, as somebody who is not as emotionally intelligent as some other people, I have a harder time understanding how to process it. So I need cues to do that.
And this is true. So yes.
Yeah.
So there's no but. Yes.
No, no but.
Period.
Just an and.
And also, for me, a lot of times it's not something that even needs to be worked through again. It's just something that needs to be accepted. Like you don't, not everything is something that I have to, because see, that's something that the brain does, is this is actually a good discussion, is that sometimes what you learn in meditation is the brain will go, oh, there's a problem. Let's look at it. Let's deal with it. And a lot of my work in meditation is to let it go. Not let it go and pretend it doesn't exist, but say, yes, I see that. I don't need to really dig into that. That can sit there. I have Marianne Williamson always says, when you're struggling with something and you don't know what to do, just put it on the altar. And for her, you know, she uses a lot of religious symbology. Just put it on the altar and let it be. You don't need to solve it. And the irony of that is, guess what happens when you put it on the altar?
It gets better.
It wasn't really an issue to begin with.
Oh, it dissipates?
You know, yeah, like a worry that you have is a good example. Like Todd's talking about processing because he's trying to deal, you know, figure out his emotions and figure out how to deal with his emotions. And the interesting thing there is that it's acceptance of them rather than what do I do with it?
Well, and a lot of times feelings, at least for me, I did this in the men's group 2 months ago, or maybe it was 3 or 4. And it was all about, we go around and ask the guys how they were feeling, and they would answer from their brain. So they would basically, I'm sad because blah, 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 blah. And they, so what we try to do is tune into the body, the intelligence of the body. Mm-hmm. And instead of explaining why you're sad, instead describe the feeling. Mm-hmm. And where is it and where does it come from and how does it feel and what color is it? Is it a twisting? Is it a tension? Like all these other things, because we are so, our backdrop or our default is simply to answer from our heads. And that is something that is hard habit to break.
Now, here's something interesting. Did anybody, when they got out of their head and got in their heart, say, actually, I don't feel it in my body? Meaning that it's really not a problem. It's a mental issue. And my body may be reacting to, you know, because obviously brain and body are connected. But what I think is interesting is sometimes when I think there's a problem because I'm having ruminating thoughts and I'm worried and I drop into my body, I'm like, actually, I'm fine. I'm creating this problem. Did they have that situation?
I don't remember what they said, but I remember being challenged by my coach and at Mankind Project, and they'd be like, where does this frustration or whatever I'm working through, like, how does that feel? And I tend to get worried that I'm too numb, like mm-hmm. I'm too detached. Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't feel anything. Mm. And so I know what you're asking, and I feel like I'm kind of responding to a different question.
Yes.
I get worried that, you know, if I am worried, how does it feel? I'm like, I don't know, because it's all up here, and it's not, I can't describe it in my body because
yes.
I simply don't feel it anywhere. I don't
right.
feel it in my chest. I don't feel it in my throat. I don't feel it in my gut.
Yeah.
But I will say that the only time that you can feel those things, I think, is when you get quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't do it when you're driving to work. I don't know. I mean, you can feel tension in your jaw. Mm-hmm. Like that's easy, but
or
like
in your legs, like, I always hold tension.
But if you have like, you know, sadness, I think it's much, you're much more likely to realize the feeling by getting quiet.
Yes.
And I don't get quiet very often.
So this is fun. This is where I get really excited because this is multi-layered. See, because what Todd is looking at it as is I really would like to figure out what I'm feeling in my body. And because I have so much body sensation, I get so overwhelmed by like, I feel too much that sometimes I recognize that that what's going on in my brain, if I really drop into my body, I'm like, actually I'm okay. It's just a brain. It's just because again, two things. Number one, the brain is always thinking and it's always,
it's a processing mechanism.
It's like I envision it like this thing going like this, and then it latches onto something, and then it just takes that and runs with it, and then you think about it all the time, and it's called worry. And then, as we know from Eckhart Tolle, worry pretends to be necessary. You think, I need to solve this. I need to solve this. How am I going to solve this? And then when you drop into your body, you're like, I don't really need to solve this.
Mm-hmm. Or I remember Eckhart be like, you need to solve it in the moment. Like if you think you're going to, you know, get evicted from your apartment.
Sure,
because,
yes.
But, you know, to worry that that's going to happen before it actually happens. Now,
right.
Obviously there's a balance because you need to take steps so you have enough money in your bank account to do it. But we tend to let worry kind of control things
right.
about things that may or may not ever happen. I would say most of the things that we worry about never happen.
Correct. Worry is glasses that we put on and we say, this is a problem I need to fix. And then
but isn't there a place for worry? Because that worry will propel me to make sure that I work at a job, that I make enough money, that I'm not going to get evicted from my apartment.
Ah, Todd is saying, isn't worry necessary?
Yeah, I forget about what Eckhart said. I now know that worry is necessary.
You don't have to be worried to get things done.
Right.
You just know in your heart something needs to get done. And if you have a sense of integrity and discipline and then sometimes worry or guilt can, it's all about what, because the thing is, I don't want you to sit here and think, well, worry is a problem when we need to get rid of it, because worry pops up just like fear does and just like anger does. But when we give it too much play, or when we say my worry helps me, we're giving it a lot of power. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, what I was going to say about...
Maybe we could give it a different word.
I think the... And this goes to Michael Singer, Untethered Soul. Like, we're quoting all these authors that we love. But when you identify with the worry, and there's no space between your essence and the worry. So basically, worry takes over your brain, your body, your all that. But if you can just separate from it a little bit, just a small space, and say, oh, that's worry, and all these things that worry is telling me is I'm going to get evicted from my apartment, I'm going to not be able to afford my kids' college education, like all these things that
those are future, by the way.
Yeah, that's all in the future. Yeah, do we worry more about future, and then what do we do about past? I forget.
We ruminate.
We try
and replay something that we can't replay. We try and we go back and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe 2 days ago I said that to that person. I'm so embarrassed.
Meanwhile, you're sitting in a chair and everything's fine.
And that person, I'm sorry, I love all of you, but they're not thinking about you. They don't care.
We all watch our own movie. What does that mean, sweetheart?
It means that we're all watching our own situation, thinking that everybody's tapping into everything we're doing and noticing everything we said and everything we wore and everything we did. And they don't care.
And that's the paradox. Like, we think like everybody is loving and cares, but yet we're all kind of, what's the word?
I don't like to use the word narcissism because that's got a negative connotation, but really we're all out there trying to, okay, so someone just said to me the other day, maybe it was on Rob Bell's show. I still listen to Robcast. And Rob was saying that we're really just a bunch of stars and material and love in a bodysuit. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, here's our bodysuit. And so there's so much going on inside of us. We're all like stars and material and love. And we gotta figure out how to handle that within our bodysuit. And we gotta figure out how to go out in the world and like be the stars and material in the bodysuit. And that takes a lot of energy and time. And the narcissism involved is not always I won't even use that word. The self-interest and the self-understanding involved is not always negative. It's like, how are we gonna put all these pieces together and present and be kind and do good and be a force for good. And that means that when I'm thinking about all those things, I didn't notice what you wore. I don't care. And because I'm trying to manage my bodysuit and all the stars in my body.
Quick resource. I don't know if you can see this. There's my phone and there's Rob Bell. He was at our conference this year. And he did an interview. Some of his shows I don't connect with at all. Mm-hmm. And other ones I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever heard. I just listened to the most recent one. He interviews a guy named Pete Rollins, and it's a 3-part series. It's some Irish guy who is...
He has him on all the time. They're good buds.
He has so much wisdom and intuition.
So smart.
He's so smart. So if you're looking for a quick 40-minute awesome podcast, I listened to part two.
I listened to part
one. That's the one I was floored by. Part one I haven't yet heard, and maybe that's better or worse, but part two is amazing. Just the intro, because they summarize part one at the beginning of part two. And we're all over the board today, by the way, but that is a really good resource. Like, when I heard it, I'm like, I need to play this on half speed. That's how good it is.
I know. I listened to part one. It's really good. And I listened to part two at Todd's.
Which one's
Todd told me. Part two.
Oh, it is.
But part one is a good foundation. Yeah. Part two is just, it's about love. And part one, he explains what he means by love and how we have like totally taken over the language making love. Because when you hear making love, everybody thinks sex. And what he talks about is what making love used to really mean was like creating love and bringing love into the world. And he kind of lays that foundation and then he goes in.
So I feel like making love is a soap opera term.
Totally.
Like Marlena would say to Roman, but you were making love to me and you were thinking about her.
Yeah. Does anyone really say
that? Does anybody use the word making love?
I don't.
Like, that's a TV term.
Totally. Let's not ever use it.
I just say sex.
Right.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me.
The funny thing is it's been like 20 minutes already.
Yeah.
Someone says to it, some people say to us a lot, aren't you worried you won't have material for shows? And I'm like, are you kidding?
First of all, I sometimes do, because there'll be weeks go by that I don't read anything. And
yeah.
I'm not looking inwards. I'm just going about my business and I got nothing. There's nothing that I have to offer. This one to my right, you could do a show every 12 hours.
Only because it's got nothing to do with my knowledge base. It's got to be,
it's because you're always working on yourself. You're always working on yourself. Come on over to my train and just don't work on yourself so much.
I can't do that. It's not all about working on myself. It's about like everything's interesting. This is interesting. The way you look at this is interesting. The way that we do this is interesting. It's so interesting. Skylar's interesting. Come here, Skylar. Come show yourself.
Just show your face.
So this week we only have one child because two of our children are at camp. So we just have Skylar. You don't have to.
No, you don't have to. But the phone is right here. So if you want the phone.
That's good. That's good parenting. Okay. So anyway, let's just move on to questions. Let's see if the people.
No, I know. I will. So I have one. Actually, I think I have two questions here. But if Kelly or Millie or Amanda have something, I'm a really big fan when you want to ask a question. So if you are, either raise your hand. Oh, Kelly. And Amanda's next.
Sweet. Okay. So here's the thing. We've gotten this feedback that if we don't remute you, then the people who are listening to the audio recording can't hear it. So if we remute you, Kelly, it's not.
And that doesn't mean you can't come back. Just raise your hand again saying, I have something to add. So okay. Here's Kelly. Kelly, where are you from?
Austin, Texas.
Nice.
Do you have an accent?
I lost it when I lived in Boston, but I can still say y'all.
Y'all.
Do you wish you had an accent, either Boston or Austin?
I'm sad that I lost it.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah,
I love accents. Cool.
But she sounds like a Midwesterner.
I know. I do say when I'm fixing to go somewhere, or I'm gonna go somewhere. That's kind of a little bit. If I drink a lot, it comes out.
Of course. So my friend Andrea, that's the same. As soon as she has two glasses of wine, all of a sudden she starts talking completely different.
That's when the truth comes out. Yeah. Okay, Kelly, what do you got?
So I have a question about how to establish kind of healthy attitude towards food. My daughter is almost 4. And so we're in that whole, you know, that's yucky and I don't want to eat that. She was a fantastic eater as a baby. I made baby food for her and she ate salmon and all kinds of stuff and vegetables. But now, and then lately we've been kind of busy. And so eating more like fast, you know, pizza and something I can fix really quickly, frozen peas and stuff like that. Yeah. And you know, I'm trying to encourage her, and I've read so much that's conflicting, because when I grew up, it was you had to sit there until you ate it, and I have trauma over canned cream corn to this day for that reason. Makes me nauseous. But, you know, I've also read now that, like, you don't want to force them to clean their plate because you want them to pay attention to their body, and also, you know, is it good to say you have to eat a bite of everything and try it, or don't make them eat anything, or, you know, you can't have dessert, which we don't have often, but you can't have dessert until you eat that so many bites or whatever. So I just don't know how to do it and help her figure out, you know, what to eat, but still eat healthy. I also think at school, she's not eating a lot. She's starving when I pick her up. She's at a Montessori, and so they don't, you know, watch them closely. And so she eats the fruit, and then at the end, they get a cheese sandwich.
Right. I know. That sounds a little like someone who comes home starving.
So, Kelly, I'm going to mute you, and then I'm going to talk, and then
you're going first.
I'm going to go first because mine's faster.
All right.
My weak answer, but yet is also very important, is trust your gut. And I hate it when people tell me that because I.
What if that was our answer to everything?
Just trust your gut. But yeah, trust your gut and also, I feel like you want to have a little bit more structure, or you want I'll even exaggerate and say, we have to have a policy. Like you, either you don't have to finish your plate, or you do have to finish your plate, or I am going to, and I would just say, be like water, be flexible, and be, you know, there's not one way to do it. Maybe on a Tuesday night, and you know that this kid is not going to gag. I used to gag. My parents used to make me eat green beans, and I can't eat green beans because I used to gag. My brother and my sister would laugh at me when I would do that. But there are times when you're like, no, we're eating together, and dad or mom spend a lot of time cooking, and I need you to try a bite. And then the next day, maybe you let them off the hook. So it's not black or white. It is, you know, maybe one day you do it this way, one day you do it that. Maybe that's what you're already doing. But I would say, at the risk of saying, well, this is just kind of the way we're going to do it now, some days they're just going to eat junky foods, and other days the only thing you have available is vegetables and a potato or whatever, and then that's just the way it is. So and the other thing Because what I struggle with is I kind of fast forward the future. Like, you know, we have certain kids, she's got her headphones on so I could talk about her behind her back. Where I'm like, oh my God, if all this kid eats is, you know, waffles and cereal, she's never going to have vegetables the rest of her life. That's simply not true. My 14-year-old used to have a really strict palate and she would only try, you know, yummy cereal. But now she tries kind of weird new things. Now
she eats everything.
It's taken years to get there. So I guess the only other advice I have is to be patient. So now I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Todd, but I would say the thing that'll help you, Kelly, is focus on what your intention is in the long term. That's what I always try and do, is instead of be like, what do I do in this moment? What's my intention in the long term? And then that can help me make choices, like Todd said, that are more fluid. So your intention in the long term, I think all of us as parents, is to give our kids options, teach them what food does to their body, remind them that what they put in their body is how they're going to end up feeling. And the key to all of this information is it's not done in a way that's scary or in a way that's threatening or that we're trying to create fear. It's just information. It's, again, we always talk about creating that space between us and our kids. It's not about, you know, Dr. Shefali always says, don't love them as much, you know, because she's funny with her language. And I, what that means is don't be so like, oh my gosh, I love you so much, I have to figure this out. Separate a little bit so you can just give them information and then trust that they're going to make these choices. Because at four, like you said, when they're really little and they don't have a lot of information, like one or two, they'll eat everything, right? And you put salmon and they're like, oh, this is good. And like even JC ate like prunes out of a jar until she was like two. Like she just loved this baby food. And then they get to a point where they're like, no. And again, it kind of goes along with your age. You know, I do it myself. I want to figure this out for myself. Sugar tastes better. So a lot of it's phase and, you know, this too shall pass. But it's offering that information and being like, and even with the, you know, like you can have, you know, cookies or our dessert. It's not like eat that or else you can't have the cookie. It's like, ah, you didn't eat anything. So maybe a cookie tomorrow then. You know, it's like the distance, the not being so intense around it takes a lot of that pressure off. And also, like Todd said, the trust that, because I say to the girls all the time, like they'll go to 7-Eleven, get a Slurpee, and then they'll have like a cookie. And then they're like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm like, well, yeah. Like, I don't say it in a threatening way. Like, well, it's, you know.
I told you so.
It's not I told you so. It's like, well, of course you're tired. You had a Slurpee and a cookie. And they'll be like, yeah. So what I'm teaching is not eat well for me. I'm teaching eat well for you. You know, like things like, say you're going on some kind of trip the next day or they have school the next day. Like, I know you want to have the cookie and it's totally fine. And, you know, that's going to be part of our meal. But have a few bites of this because it'll really help you tomorrow. So you're giving them that intrinsic desire to do something. And you're giving them control. It's not about doing it for you. Because that's what parents make the mistake is sit down and you're going to eat this and I'm going to tell you when to go. And you are completely disconnecting them from their food.
And the litmus test is if after you have an exchange with your daughter, she's a daughter. Okay. Half an hour afterwards, how do you feel? Like, do you feel good about it? Or do you feel like, ooh, I don't really like how I handled it. Cause you know, you're going to screw it up just like we screw up. And then you're going to have successes. Like, oh my God, I can't believe that kid just ate that. And the other thing I was going to say is, to Kathy's point, is release control. And what we're trying to do is influence our children. We don't want to control our children. So you want to like...
Because you want it to do them when... You want them to do things when you're not around.
Right.
So you're not trying to say, you'll be afraid of me. Or when you're at this table, you eat whatever I tell you. It's... You're trying to give them, like Todd said, information to eat well.
And you want a role model. And that doesn't mean... Kathy loves Portillo's chocolate cake. She has it once a week, maybe, if you're lucky.
If I'm lucky, once a week.
I love ice cream. So it's not like, oh, now all of a sudden, oh, role model. So now you're saying, Todd, I got to eat perfectly. No, but...
I'm not giving up chocolate cake.
Just FYI. I'll put that in the notes. Kathy, not giving up chocolate cake. So I don't know. Is that... I'm going to unmute you just to hear what you have to say, Kelly.
That was perfect. Thank you so much.
Oh, good.
Oh, wow.
If that was perfect,
that must mean that we're perfect.
Oh, my gosh. Made it.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. All right. We're going to Amanda next. Hold on, Amanda. Hang tough. Amanda, where are you from?
I'm from New York. Can you hear me?
Yes. I can hear you just
fine. Okay. I'm on my iPhone, so it's hard to figure this out. It's perfect. I live in Westchester, New York, and I have an almost 7-year-old daughter and a 3.5-year-old son. And my daughter is very strong-willed and very curious about the world and always keeps us on our toes. But lately, the dynamic between the four of us, my husband and I and two kids, feels very off. And so my daughter, she's very jealous of my son, and we know this and we try to work on this. But she's sort of built this like this shortness or kind of like a rudeness. And I know you guys have talked about this before in your show, but it's starting to feel like it's part of her everyday being. Like, you know, you say good morning and it's like, morning. Or, you know, she'll say, get me this, like kind of a demanding tone. And I struggle with, you know, how much do I sort of ignore and let it go? I don't want to then it become a power struggle. Say please, because it's not about the words. So I don't want to create that power struggle. But I also don't want her to treat us with disrespect. And it feels like disrespect. And, you know, we don't do much by way of discipline, although my husband and I will then argue over how do we handle her lack of respect at times or this rudeness. So we're struggling with that as well as just the sibling rivalry. And my son, on the other hand, he's very, by nature, very like kind-hearted and sweet. And so, you know, this morning he said, thank you, mommy. And I said, for what? And he said, for making me breakfast and those kinds of things. So she'll see that, and she's not that way. And anyway, we're struggling.
Yeah, she'll roll her eyes and be like, "Ugh," when he's
yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
Let me go first.
Okay.
So first of all, this is a total trigger, because whenever any kid is a smart aleck to me, first of all, I used to be the biggest smart ass ever.
You're seeing yourself.
I think I waited until I was like a 8th grade or freshman year, but I just remember just loving getting under the skin of friends or family. So I got to call myself.
And you were like that with me when we first started dating. Remember, when Todd and I first were together and we'd be with his family, he'd like to make me the butt of the joke.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And I would like leave and I'd go, why were you making so much fun of me in front of everybody? And he'd be like, what are you talking about? And you didn't even know you were doing
no,
that.
No, I did. So you're basically saying, have my back. And I did not have your back in that moment.
I felt like he would like throw me into the family and be like, let's all laugh at Kathy.
So, sorry about that.
He doesn't do that anymore. Yeah.
So Amanda, first of all, I totally hear your frustration. And it's so funny because I remember one of JC's friends when she was like 6 or 7, what was Anup's daughter's name?
Emmy.
Emmy. Mm-hmm. She was like the sweetest, I don't know, she was Indian or Pakistani or something like that. She just used the best manners. I'm like, oh my God, I love this kid. So basically my interpretation of whether or not a kid was good or bad is whether or not they used manners, which is total hogwash. So I'm totally with you. And then, the one thing I'll say is, you and your husband need to get on the same page as best you can, not while the kids are around. And I don't know, are you not fighting? Amanda, are you arguing about this in front of the kids or no?
No, we tend to not do it in front of the kids, but you know, there's an energy that certainly is there when we're annoyed at each other, even if we're not verbalizing it in front of the kids. Yeah. There's an energy to it that obviously they're picking up on.
And is she a smart aleck to everybody or just to mom and dad and brother?
Oh, just to us. Oh, I mean, she's not an overly, you know, she's, if you say hello or can I have a hug, like if other people do, she doesn't really like to give hugs. So she's not a smart aleck. She's great with peers and with other people. She's not rude.
Okay, so, and that makes sense.
She's saving it for the fam.
Yeah, and we usually get a lot of times we get the worst version of themselves because they know that you're gonna love her regardless of what she does. So that's very typical. But is it possible that, and this is just a guess, is she trying to get attention that she may not feel like she's getting at home, and this is the way she's getting it? Now I'm gonna unmute you.
I think that's probably part of it. The thing is that she wants a lot of attention, and so it's not possible to always give her all the attention that she wants. And when her brother gets any attention, she really, really has a hard time with it. And she can get aggressive and, you know, get in his face about it. And so, yeah, I think that's true. She wants attention. But the problem is, how do you balance it? Because she can't always get it. And I don't want her to just be able to be, you know, rude because she's not the center of attention all the time.
So the last thing I'll say, and then I'm going to turn it over to my sweetheart.
I'm missing all these things. I want
to. Oh, you can write it down. All right. We did a show on love languages, and we'll put in the show notes or whatever we're calling these things. You said your daughter doesn't like to give hugs, and just figure out what her love language is, and maybe that'll help. So we'll put that in the show notes. So that'll be a resource for you to go back to afterwards. So, sweetie, it's your turn.
Did you say she was 10?
She's 7.
7. And then your son is 4. Got it. Okay. Yeah. So one thing that I think is really important when kids are doing that, we've definitely had that, mostly between Cameron and Skylar, is that you tackle it head on, meaning that doesn't mean you tackle it head on to get rid of it. You talk about it in the most matter of fact way. You don't do a lot of I was gonna call it fruity language. You don't do a lot of "now, we're nice, whatever we say." You seem really angry at your brother. You know, like, you tackle it, you call out exactly what's happening rather than talk about it in abstract terms. Not to discipline, but to, it's like you're trying, anytime there's an issue, it's kind of like with Kelly and the food, go to the core of it. What do you really want to do? What is really the problem? Because a lot of times we tackle things up here. And what I did with these girls all the time is one thing I will tell you before I say all this is there is an end to this, meaning that this is a phase. That doesn't mean you still have to deal with it now. So I'm not saying don't worry about it. I'm saying that if you tackle it head on and it's something that's discussed, to Todd's point about attention, the thing that your daughter is feeling was paid attention to. Because what we think when Todd says, is it an attention seeking, we think that we need to give more attention, like take her out more, have a date with her, or watch a show with her. It's not that kind of attention. It's pay attention to what I'm really trying to say and what is that underneath. And I've had sit down at this table with Cameron or in her bed where I've said, you seem really angry with Skylar, but is it about Skylar or what am I not seeing? What am I missing? And she'll say things like, I feel like she gets away with everything. Or, you know, she just annoys me when she chews. Do you remember the whole chewing thing?
Smacks. Skylar's a smacker.
Right. But it wasn't bothering her 6 months before. The smacking was what allowed her to release her anger. But what was really under there was something else. And I wish I could tell you and say, one night we solved it. It didn't work out that way. It wasn't like
it dissipated, and it might show up again.
But what did happen is I didn't pay attention to her in a surfacey way. I paid attention to that issue. And I kept coming to her. And again, that's going to be your work, Amanda, is you're not coming to her in a I'm angry at you way. You're disappointing me. You're throwing off our family dynamic. You're the problem. Because if you come to her in that way, she'll get tougher. She's going to toughen her skin more and say, that's my role. You know, the one who is demonstrating the behavior is the one who's feeling everything and feels like no one's talking about it. And when I say that, that doesn't mean there's some internal problem. I'm telling you, this happened in our family too. It doesn't mean that there's some big problem. It just means that she doesn't know how to express her
real feelings.
So instead it's showing up this way. So you're going to her and you're saying, and then all those other little issues that she doesn't want to hug or she gets frustrated or she rolls her eyes, you notice them and you pay attention. And there may be times when it's like, okay, you know, like if it, like you said, if the disrespect is going too far, say, I know, I understand that you're frustrated right now, but you know, there's kind of like a let's cool it kind of thing. Not a, you have to go to your room, but like the word I keep using is you're noticing it. And you're noticing it, again, it's like the food. Separate a little bit, get rid of the parent role for a second, and just be like, if you see a kid being mean to another kid or to another person, you know there's some kind of pain, right? And it's not necessarily something you did or something you're doing wrong. They're just feeling, she doesn't feel as visible as her brother. And what she needs to understand is she doesn't have to be like him to be worthy. Because a lot of what I think our kids pick up on is, I don't want to be like that. And he gets such good attention for that, but I am not that. And what you're saying to her in these deep talks is everything you are is good. And you can be that without being angry at him. Meaning there's, kids think that life is a pie. And that there's, if he's getting attention, that's taking away from my attention. And what we're teaching them is that it's limitless, that him getting love does not take away from her love. And that it's, and that's a great concept to understand as a kid, because adults, we do that, right? We're like it when someone fails, you know, what is that German word?
Schneidenfruit.
We get happy when someone else has like a problem, because we're like, oh, now I won't have a problem. And that's not true. There's enough problems for everybody too.
One or two last things on that is, I had a conversation with a guy. I played basketball this morning, and I know this buddy of mine is having a hard time with his stepson, who's like 18 years old, and he's going off this laundry list of all the things that he's doing wrong. He talks back to his mom. He's missing. He's late for work. He's has no future vision of his life. All this other stuff, and I challenged him, and I said, well, when was the last time you complimented him? And he's like, well, there's nothing to compliment. And I'm like, there's always something to compliment. That is a little disjointed with what you're talking about, Amanda, but when your daughter does something good, whether it's using manners or whatever, catch those moments and reinforce it.
But not in a cheesy over the top way.
Yeah.
Because that's the whole thing that is.
Can I see your version of cheesy over the top?
So good. Oh my gosh, that was so good. And then the kid's like,
yeah,
dude.
Like, I'm not doing that again.
I put my plate in the sink. Like, they're so like onto us, like when we're trying to do a new technique. All it is a thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
That's it.
Touch. And one thing that I'm really big on, and this is a personality thing, maybe you or your husband is like this, kids who are struggling with something, who maybe aren't feeling seen for whatever reason. And to Todd's point, this will happen again and again and again. Like, doesn't it for us? Don't we go through times where we don't feel seen? This is a human thing. So if we can kind of figure out how to deal with it when it comes up, and one good thing to do, especially, you know, we have three kids, and so there's a lot of that, like, is touch. Is when I'm with one of them, if I'm talking to them, I sometimes do this kind of stuff, just like I do on Todd. I touch them. I like, you know, kind of mess with their hair.
Easy.
Oh, sorry. Todd's got a lot of gel. What'd you do, swim here? It's a line from Friends. That's what.
Imagine that.
Jennifer Aniston's dad says to Ross. But anyway, he, but it's like just, you know, it's contact through touch and words, and not thinking that everything is us kind of standing back and directing. And
well, that's a love language thing too.
Yeah, right? That, to Todd's point about love language, she may not be typically physical touch. And like you said, she doesn't like to give hugs. So she may give you indicators like, too much. So maybe you
Cameron, do. I've never gotten a kiss from Cameron. She's 12 years old.
She's kissed you. You just
I don't think out. So. Maybe when she was a baby.
She does this.
I go in to kiss her, and she does the old head down.
And I can say, as her mom, who's very similar to her, her sensitivity is much greater than the other two. She feels everything. Cameron and I, our space, you know how you can do spatial awareness, and most people, this is like when I used to work with kids as a therapist, we talked about this being our bubble. If you put your arms out, then this is like our bubble, and you want to be thoughtful when you come into other people's bubble. Cameron and my bubble is much bigger. I'm not saying I can't be next to people. Of course I can. But sometimes people are close talkers. My bubble, I need more space. I'm more sensitive. I have less. I'm more
tolerance.
Raw. Yeah.
Less tolerance.
I feel things more. And so does she. So when people come at her, it hurts her skin. It like hurt, and I'm using these words because I know how that feels. And some Todd, it doesn't. Todd will pull the girls and like kiss them all over, and he'll do that to me sometimes. I'm like, don't do it. I don't like it.
Come on.
I don't like it. And I don't like it. And he's. And
but I do.
And
what's more important?
And he will say, but that's how I love you, and that's me loving you, and I'm kissing you. I can't believe you don't like that I kiss you. And I'm like, of course I do, but you have to be thoughtful about my spatial awareness. So I'm going on an offshoot, Amanda, about your daughter. But what I'm saying is she may have a different bubble, and you can respect that, but you can still do like very grounded touch. Grabbing someone is very different than grounded touch. You guys can't see what I'm doing, but I do a lot of this with my kids' hands, grounded touch, like hold it like this, and then let go. I don't need you to hold back. You don't go in for a hug so you get one back. It's not for you. You are giving it. And then by doing that, she is getting more used to that kind of touch, and that's becoming a new way of communication. So it can be less words and more that. And especially with my daughters, my daughter who's 14, she and I walk like this all the time. Mm. This is my new way of touching her because she can't sit in my lap anymore.
Sweetie, they can't see.
Oh, so when JC and I walk together, I walk like this with her. And I'm doing that on purpose to stay attached to her. And but I don't need anything from her. I'm not doing that because I want something. I'm doing that because my intention is I want to stay connected to you. I love you. And if she is not in the mood to walk with me that way, that's fine.
Yeah, then you back off.
Sure. So these are just, you know, so in answer to your question, like just a few things, and then Todd will unmute you. Number one, it's normal. So your kid's not, you know, like some awful kid who's being mean. She gets to practice with your son about how to relate to people. Siblings are like, they get to practice at home.
They get to practice life.
They get to practice life. Like, this person annoys me. How am I going to react? So it's very normal. And number two, separating it from it a little bit so you don't feel like it's something you need to solve or do. You can see it as like, and then going straight to the source of it, calling it out what it is. It seems like you're really mad. Having times and not looking for an answer. It doesn't need to be solved. She comes down and she's like, hey, and you're like, oh, you seem annoyed today. You don't need an answer. You don't need her to say, yes, I am, and this is why. And you also don't need to be validated. You're just pointing it out. You're giving her a mirror, a reflection. And then at night, or when you guys are alone, or if you're on a walk, or if you have 5 minutes with her, saying, doing the grounding thing and saying, you seem really frustrated with your brother, and I just want you to know I notice. And again, it doesn't have to be my words, but anyway, I'll shut up.
Amanda, what do you think?
That is so helpful. Thank you. I think at night especially, that's when she softens a little bit. In the moment, it's too hard to get through to her. But at night, when I'm putting her to bed, that's when sometimes I'll bring things up. So that's a perfect time to just narrow in on it and say, you seem really angry. I think that's perfect.
Yes.
So much.
Yes, thank you.
And that you are not disappointed in her, that she's
right.
You're just noticing. Again, it's like, you're just a mirror, and you're like, I get annoyed too.
So it's 2:49. Does anybody else? Millie's here. Sure. All right, hold on. Old Millie. Okay, Millie, can you hear us?
I can.
And I can
hear me?
Perfect.
I know it's getting late, so I'll try to make this quick. I'm sorry, I missed last week's because I would have probably chimed in with my question then. I'm like Todd, where my trigger is when, okay, first of all, I should say we have a 10-year-old daughter and then my 5-year-old twin boys. So this is about my 10-year-old. But it's been a trigger for at least 2 years, since she was 8 or so, where probably even longer than that. Anyway, when she is disrespectful in her response, it just totally triggers me. And I try really hard to not come back, you know, with anger or anything. And I like what you said last time about meeting it with curiosity or humor, which I will try very, very hard to do. What I'm asking about specifically is something happened just recently at camp where I tried to give her some constructive criticism. What happened was she was the one person out of a threesome, which threesomes, as you probably know, can be hard because the two other girls, she is the only friend of the, you know, that knows these two other girls. The other two girls did not know each other. So I should have probably prepped her a little bit with how to be the bridge, you know, so that she could be with one friend and also be with the other friend and have them come together. It ended up being, unfortunately, she latched onto one friend and then the other one felt very left out. Very natural that this happens. I totally understand that. But I tried to come back once I learned that this was the situation. This one other girl was then acting out and being rude back and sassy back to the other, you know, the group, just to say, hey, you know, how's it going? First of all, I asked, you know, how's it going with your friends? You know, it must be very interesting to be the one friend that knows both girls, you know? So that's when she kind of went, I knew already what was going on, right? But, and then that's when it kind of came out that this other friend is kind of being sassy and kind of rude to the group, but that's because she is hurt, right? I totally get it. And so then I tried to explain to her, you know, it's probably because hurt people, you know? And so she was being sassy probably because she was feeling left out. What do you think? You know, anyway, once I tried to get a little deeper with that, this is her response whenever I try to give constructive criticism. I don't want to hear anymore. Don't talk to me anymore. You know, that totally triggers me because I'm just trying to talk to you and I'm not trying to go, you know, but I don't want to hear it anymore. So this has happened in all kinds of instances, homework or anything. So what would your suggestion be to a reaction to that?
Awesome. I'm going to mute you, Millie. My answer is very brief. I would say read the moment. And when you think that it might not be the best time to offer constructive criticism, don't offer it, even though it's really hard not to, because you want to catch it when it's fresh on everybody's mind. But if there is a time of the day, a day of the week where you guys are already kind of connecting, maybe then would be a more appropriate time to offer it. And that's my two cents. And before I turn it to Kathy, I just want to hear from you, Millie. What are do you already do that, or what do you think?
I definitely try to follow up, you know, at a quieter moment when there is connection. I think the instances when that's a little hard is like the time when she just would not do the work, the homework that she was supposed to. That I knew that she needed my support because it was a huge project and it was something she needed to do research on, and she didn't have the resources to do it. So I knew that it required a parental assistance. But I would set aside time to sit with her and say, okay, how can I support you? How can I help you? And she would just sit there and go, oh. And like she ultimately laid on her bed and didn't. And I said, and that was one time, rare, rare, rare time that I let loose. I didn't yell, but I raised my voice and said, I'm sorry, but you're not going to disrespect me by just laying there and not even answering my questions. I'm taking time away. I put my boys in front of the TV just so I could support her, you know, and I'm, because it was due, you know, it was something that was due. There was a time constraint to that. So I said, I'm fine with you not having a presentation to stand up in front of the classroom. I just want you to understand that's what's going to happen. You know, you're going to stand up in front of them and you will have nothing to say. I'm okay with that because this is not my project, but you tell me, I mean, please don't disrespect my time, you know, by just laying there and covering up your ears. Okay, so that just is one instance where there's like a more time, you know, a time constraint. And so she did react to that and she came back. I left the room and then she came back and she was, you know, she was busy like writing, but.
Okay, I'm gonna turn it over to Kathy even though
go ahead.
Okay, first of all, if you lost it, Millie, and you're not proud of your behavior, if you felt justified, I'm not gonna tell you to apologize, but if you did feel like, wow, I didn't handle that really well, I would go back and say, I don't feel like I handled that well. And then the other thing is maybe allow for some natural consequences. Maybe she gets up in front of the group and completely has nothing to say and let some peer pressure work, and you're still a mom who's connected with your daughter. So that's my concern.
Yeah, I would say when she does the thing where she puts her hands over her ears and you know, you're telling her something, she says, no, you just say, okay, done. And you're not done with, I'm done with you, I'm done. You say, okay, I hear you. And do you see, did you just even feel the energy change? There's nothing. She's saying, I don't want to listen to you. Okay, all right. And then when she takes her hands off her ears, because then she's left with her emotion. And it's not, you're not trying to punish her with her, it's her emotions. You're not giving her anything. You're not adding to that fire.
And you can't take her emotions over anything.
No, you can't. You're separating yourself from that situation. The parenting role tells us we need to solve this and teach this and explain this right now, or else we're not doing our job. And when you're, when really you understand what your job is to stay connected to your kid and to listen to them. And again, under, with the understanding, I'm going to jump ahead, Millie, with the understanding by doing that, you're teaching her to do the same. You have to trust that. When you're listening to her and you're not getting involved, you're teaching her how to listen too. So because we'll say, but I got to deal with that thing where she was disrespectful. But if you give her the role modeling of, okay, you can't hear me right now. I get you out. Then she knows how to do that for other people. Do you see? Now, what's interesting about that is that you are also, I'm like giving you like a 1-2, because this is, it's hard. You also say when she takes her hands off her ears, if you do want to talk about it, just know I'm here. You just let it all go. It's like I was saying at the beginning about putting it on the altar. Kids do not learn from our lectures. They don't. We think they do, and so we think we need to say everything, but we're saying it for us. We're saying it so we can say, I taught that. Check. And I still do it. I'm good at lecturing, man. I have all sorts of things to say. You guys think I talk a lot on this show? But I also sometimes catch myself in the middle of a long soliloquy about life, and I'm like, nobody cares. They're just, they're like, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. And then I do the same. They're probably doing this without doing this. Yeah. They may not be doing this, but they're kind of like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I stop. And I say, okay, you're right. I'm talking a lot.
And then you got to sit with your own discomfort, yeah, because you feel like you have all this wisdom to bestow or instruction to give, and you're not getting that opportunity. And that is our work, and is to sit in that discomfort.
And the trust is that because, again, it's going back to the core. How do kids learn? By watching how we live, right? So if I know that and I believe that, which I do, then I don't need to lecture. Then I'm like, I want to lecture because I like to hear myself talk. Oh, look at what a great thing I said. Look at how great that was.
That's why we do a podcast.
Look
everybody,
how smart.
Listen to us.
I listen to me. I got things to say. But my kids are wonderful mirrors in that way of that they're like, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm, because they're just watching me live. Like, how am I? And when someone does this, her body can't listen.
Forget
right then,
it.
Melanie.
You're
She's done.
Done.
And you may say, but you should listen.
Yes, she should, but she's not.
And should she? Or is she so full of that situation that with her friends, she's so overwhelmed by that? Because as a kid, they may not.
It's
kids, kids can have a tough situation and then go home and forget about it for a while. It's why when you say to a kid, you don't have to go to school till tomorrow, it feels like forever to them. They're like, I don't have to go till tomorrow. Where to us, we'd be like, but no, you should get some sleep and think about it, worry about it. But to them, that's light years away. She had an argument with her, or not an argument, but she had this disagreement with her friends, and it felt so uncomfortable, and it was yucky, and she didn't know what to do, and she may not have made great choices, but then she was away from it, and she's like, oh, I'm better. And then we as parents, I'm like you, Millie, I want to be like, well, let's diagnose this and discuss this and dissect this. And she's like, oh my God, I don't want to talk about it, especially because she doesn't want to disappoint you. You're her person. And sometimes the constructive criticism that we give feels to them like you're disappointed in the way I responded. That's not what we're saying. And I always get, I get that feedback from my kids sometimes. Like, when you're telling me this, it's like you're saying that I didn't do it right. And that's really not what I'm always saying, but maybe I am. I don't know. But they call me out on that. So again, going back to the real basics, when she's doing this, say, okay. You can even do a okay. Okay, gotcha. If you want to talk about it later, I'm here. And you can say in a few days or the next day or that night, how's it going? I'm pretending her name, the little girl's name is, Lisa. How are things with Lisa? Ah, they're still uncomfortable. Okay, well, just know. So I do that a lot with my teen girls, with my 14-year-old and she's almost a teen, my 12-year-old, is I just, sometimes if I know something's big in their life, like I'll just bring it up. Out of the blue, I'll just be reading a book and I'll just be like, hey, how's, you know, how's Samantha doing? Is that getting better? I'm trying to show that it doesn't matter either way.
It's not that big of a deal to us. Cause the minute that we come to it with an energy of this is a really big deal, even if you're using soft language, this is like body awareness.
Yes.
Like you need to go into this with an intention of, I don't really care what happens out of this conversation, as opposed to, I need her to listen to me, and then I need her behavior to be modified. Because if that's your intention, you're setting yourself up for failure.
She does this. If she's mom wants to change me, she does this. If it's your stand, you know, it's almost even my body language. It's like, how's that going? Then she knows there's room to breathe. Mm-hmm. She can share with you. So anyway.
Millie, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. I think even though, like you said, Todd, I honestly, in that homework scenario, I had wanted her to, because when she's in, this was third or second grade is a fine time to fail, right? At something. I'd rather her do some, you know, I was fine with her. I really wanted her to almost not do that project, you know, but I think, like you said, it was the energy I brought to her, even though my words were, that's okay by me, you know, but I think I brought tension to that, to the room, right? When I was feeling like, oh, come on, you know? So it will be very hard for me to, when she does this, for me to just breathe and walk away or say, okay, you know, but I will, that is helpful. Yeah, just to.
What you just did was so perfect. When you just go, okay. And even like, there's like, you can, it's not like we have to pretend we're not a little exacerbated. But your energy just that second was so good because you're like, okay, like, you know, she knows, mom. She knows that you would rather talk about this. You're not pretending to be something other than you are. What you're doing is you're respecting her. Okay.
Yeah.
I love you. I even do that a lot. I love you. I'm here. And so then it's just funny. I, the first time you do this, I would love to know what she does because then she's going to go, What about the argument?
Where did my mom go?
And that's how she learns that there's more room. Do you see what I mean? You just created room for her to come to you because it was constricted and then it opened.
Yeah.
So now she has room.
And it may take a while for her to open. It may take a week, a month, a year. You don't know, but you got to trust it. Okay, it's 103. This might be a world record.
And that's fine with me because that's why you guys are here. We'll stay on. I mean, unless we have some kind of appointment, but I want to make sure everybody comes on to the best of our ability. We obviously not 2 hours, but you know what I mean? We want to answer the questions.
So thank you to Kelly, to Millie, and to Amanda.
Amanda just went up.
And everybody else that's listening.
There's some phone calls.
After the case. Love you guys.
Love you guys. See you later. Stop.